Bankless Nation, happy second week of September. It is time for the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. David, you and I are back to our natural habitat, which is looking at each other through screens rather than being in person together.
That's right. I got a moment of 3D Ryan this last week, yeah. And man, it was weird. It was a little too
weird.
Real.
It's not great, is it? David's like, quick, let's leave. Let's go back
go
to screens.
Home.
Make this normal again.
Chat over Discord, please.
And you're actually in Lisbon, so you're all the way in Spain now. So
yes. Wow. I have gone from New York, from Argentina to New York to Lisbon. Haven't done a weekly roll-up in New York, actually.
You and I live very different lives. Let me just tell you that with respect to our travel.
Sure.
It's great. Okay. but I know you caught this. This is a question for the Bankless Nation. One of the things we're going to talk about today is the Trump versus Harris debate. Did you enjoy it? Did the crypto prices enjoy it? That's the question.
DeFi had its debut in the first hearing around DeFi, specifically DeFi, in the United States House of Congress. How did it go? We introduced DeFi to Congress. Did they like it? In the world of crypto natives, Frentech has burned their keys governing over the app. Are they abandoning the project, or is this fulfilling the cypherpunk values of, you know, decentralized protocols? What's going on over here?
Not your keys, not your app, I guess. Maybe it's everyone's app to find out. Also, ENS was integrated into PayPal and Venmo this week. That's a pretty big freaking deal. And Coinbase released a tokenized version of Bitcoin just this morning as we're recording the roll-up. And Sony is launching a stablecoin. Lastly, David, did we just catch a glimpse of Vitalik, war mode Vitalik? Is that what's going on Twitter?
Dude, he's crescendoing in something, spiciness.
Something. We'll talk
energy.
About that spiciness.
Yeah.
David, we got an announcement. Speaking of Ethereum and spiciness, there's a spicy event coming up for you. Tell us about it, because you've been planning this. David is the mastermind. I have had almost nothing to do with the Bankless Summit. What is the Bankless Summit, David?
Yeah, I'm achieving a lifelong, crypto career long bucket list, which is hosting something like TED Talks for Ethereum, which we're calling the Bankless Summit. This is the day after DevCon. It is a one-day event, one-stage event with no panels. And so I have recruited some of my favorite speakers, some of, I think, the best speakers
who
in Ethereum.
Got? Give us some names. Name some names.
Justin Drake, of course. up-and-coming EF researcher Mike Noider. Amin Soleimani, one of my personal heroes. Matt Cutler, who I've watched him give multiple presentations. They're always fascinating. Eric Wall from Bitcoin
Eric
Land.
Wait, Eric Wall? That's
Eric Wall.
A Bitcoin guy, huh?
Uh-huh. Bitcoiner, yeah. We got Anthony Cesano. Opening it up. He's going to open up the whole entire
Sasano
thing.
Keynote,
he's going to give
the
opening speech. Yeah, exactly. Talking about just actually how well Ethereum is doing. Since it's all very bullish.
Yeah.
My friend Janine Ledger, who's going to talk all about this pop-up city revolution that she has been spawning ever since Zuzalu, ever since she planned Zuzalu, now is creating this whole edge city movement. Oh, you've been hearing about all these pop-up cities, right? Like, she's at the epicenter, so she's going to tell that story. Mainly the idea is like really good content. The speakers that I've chosen, I am charging with making the most interesting content possible. I know you don't go to conferences, Ryan, so I have to kind of fill you in on the conference meta, but there has been this like massive side event meta of like, instead of people buying booths, they just they host a side event. And these people also don't tend to know how to like curate good content, in my opinion. And so I am doing something that's a little bit of the opposite of the kind of content that I find at these side events, which is like 6-person panels that are like just not optimized. And so no panels. The only time there's going to be 2 speakers in where Ansgar and Casper are presenting their ideas about the Ethereum monetary policy, because that's what they care about. That's what they're passionate about. So all these speakers have been charged with producing the most interesting content possible about the thing that they are most passionate about. So 6 hours of the most interesting content that you can enjoy. If you are a Bankless citizen, you have 70% off of a
wow,
ticket price.
Really?
Current ticket price is $100. It goes up as we sell out waves and waves and waves. There is only 600 person capacity in this venue. So there's only 600 tickets. The first wave of 125 tickets we released this Monday. We're already like 50% sold out. And they're also the cheapest that they will ever be. If you are not a Bankless citizen, but you are a Bankless weekly roll-up enjoyer, you get 20% off.
A little discount.
There is a link in the show notes. Also, if you're a Daily Gway member, there is a Discord for you somewhere in the Daily Gway Discord. Go find it. And then a few other communities as well. You will know them if you are in them.
You almost got me, David. I was almost,
you almost came
I was
out.
Briefly thinking about maybe going to another in-person event, but I might have to live vicariously through you yet again.
There'll be some pretty cool perks if you are there in real life, because at the end of every single talk presentation, there will also be an audience Q&A as well. And so there is actual utility of going there and being in person.
Yeah, we like our tokens with utility, don't we? Yeah. Our conferences too.
Utility tickets.
Let's talk about prices, David. And we got to thank Kraken for providing us these fantastic Kraken Pro charts. And I guess fantastic because we're up on Bitcoin. Tell me about that.
2.3% on the week, started at 56,000, ending 57,650. So yeah, up a little bit.
I'll take that. And how about ETH price?
Currently at $2,330.
I swear this market hates ETH right now, doesn't it, David? I think that's turning around, though. That's going to turn around this quarter.
We're getting Ben Gowan said. It can't get that much worse without something materially.
And now we got War Mode Vitalik, maybe. We'll get to that later. But let's go check in on some more bleakness, which is the Ethereum ETF flows. Haven't been great. Still kind of draining out of Ether.
We did break that red phase. We did have one day of inflows on the 10th of $11 million. So we finally broke that like 10-day long streak. All right. And then the next day, September 11th, $500,000 outflow, which I'll call nothing.
All right. So we just need...
BlackRock yet to sell. BlackRock has not had any ETH go out.
To break even though, David, we just need 50 more days, exactly like September 10th. That's it. Then we're even.
It's not that many.
Could be worse.
We haven't seen the TradFi reflexive FOMO into crypto assets yet. I would like to see how much FOMO they have.
You know who disagrees with you though is Jim Bianco. Jim Bianco had a take this week.
He's been a little bearish lately.
He's bearish ETFs specifically. So what's Jim saying here, David?
Yeah, he's kind of implying that the tides are turning with the ETFs and not in the direction that we want. He's saying TLDR inflows have now turned into outflows. Holders have recorded losses now for the first time. Advisors hold less than 10% of all the ETF holdings, which he's saying implies that like boomers never came. Mm. This is all going to like kind of retail end investors. Like Ryan, you have a Bitcoin ETF in your retirement account, right?
Yeah. And I'm a crypto native. It's not the majority of my funds. I'm old money, I guess. I'm not a net new buyer of ETFs.
You're not doing the thing that the ETF was said it was going to do, which is like attract new capital, attract new buyers. And then last, he also says the average trade size is less than $12,000. Also, what he's saying is an indicator that the participants of these ETF markets are just not in size. Is more individuals, not like, you know, multi-billion dollar institutions. So his conclusion is not an adoption vehicle. He says it's a small tourist tool and on-chain is returning to TradFi. So we're actually just kind of getting an outflowing of people being on-chain to people being on BlackRock.
Yeah, he has some supporting evidence for this too, but he basically kind of says like check back in 2028 is the TLDR.
Yikes. I think that's like, okay, but that's like, okay, tides are turning, it's bearish now. But also I'm like, what, like boomers never came? That means they still haven't bought our bags? That's just great.
Matt Hogan actually disagrees on some of the points that Jim makes. So he says, Jim is wrong here. Investment advisors are adopting Bitcoin ETFs faster than any new ETF in history. And investment advisors is kind of the class of investors that Jim was saying is not really here, right? These are, you know, third party, maybe baby boomers, like older retail investors that go through some sort of registered investment advisor. And then he looks at the data and says, per this table, the BlackRock ETF has attracted $1.45 billion in net flows from investment advisor. Jim calls this small because it's a fraction of the $46 billion that has flowed into Bitcoin ETFs in total. But if you excluded all of their flows and just looked at the $1.45 billion linked to investment advisors, that would be the second fastest growing ETF. The BlackRock ETF would be the second fastest growing ETF launched this year out of 300 launches. So he's saying he agrees with Jim that, these registered investment advisor purchasers are small in the context of all of the Bitcoin ETF flows. But actually, it's pretty large compared to every other ETF. So Matt Hogan, who is somebody, by the way, didn't he tell us he talks to 20,000? Like Bitwise talks to like 20,000 registered investment advisors. He still is saying that the demand feels pretty strong here. So a bit of a back and forth going on the ETF story.
There is just this big conflation of the Grayscale trust that really just skews up the purity of the data here.
Sure.
Like, we don't really know how much is like organic adoption versus just people swapping out of Grayscale and going into an actual real ETF. But nonetheless, like, being bearish on the ETFs, I think, is just categorically wrong. It's just about of like, what are your expectations and how do they compare to those expectations?
You want to talk about the ETH-Bitcoin ratio, or is that still sore?
Speaking of expectations.
Too sore, yeah.
Oh, okay, well, now the ETH-Bitcoin ratio is so bad that I am just like, fuck it, make it worse. And just break it.
Yeah,
just go down to 0.03. We are currently at 0.0404.
Yeah.
So we are fingernails above breaking into 0.3 territory,
okay.
0.03
okay.
territory.
Okay.
So just go down to 0.03 and bounce back up. Like that, just break it, make it hurt.
In my experience, that is the actual end stage of capitulation. You're not capitulating until David Hoffman is like, actually, I want it to go lower. Make it hurt more.
Yeah, make it hurt more.
That is actually
punch me in the face.
So we may have bottomed on this, or we may be about to bottom. We'll see on that.
I mean, I feel like that was partly my interest in bringing Kyle Samani on the podcast. He's like, just make it hurt, dude. Tell me what I don't want to
crack another rib. All right, crypto market cap. What are we at on the week?
2.12 trillion. Still keeping our head above that $2 trillion level.
You want to talk about inflation, David, in broader markets?
Sure.
So inflation has dropped to a 3-year low. Jerome Powell did it. Victory. Mission accomplished.
Consumer honestly, prices. Like, you can't hate Jerome Powell. We were shitting on him so much. They kind of nailed it.
Well, yeah. I mean, he so got this far part right. Consumer prices rose 2.5% in August from a year earlier. That's down from 2.9% in July. And from July to August, prices just rose 0.2%. So can anyone out there say that inflation is still running hot? I don't think so. They could say it might come back months from now, years from now, but I think they've got to give credit to Powell.
Dude, there has been like under 1% inflation for like 4 months.
Right. Okay. So what this means, of course, is that the Fed is going to be looking at unemployment, which we've talked about in this section a number of times. And we're looking at by the next roll-up, Jerome Powell will have already given his guidance on what the Fed plans to do next. And everyone is anticipating, the market is anticipating a rate cut of about 0.25% to 0.5%. And that could happen on September 17th, 18th. That's kind of the time horizon.
So many eyeballs are watching this right now.
Yes.
All financial markets are watching this right
and
now.
And expecting it. So we're expecting some easing in rates. So if he doesn't, can you imagine if he doesn't?
Oh, so, my God, that would be so bad.
No rate cut. We're just fine. I think that's very low probability of playing out. But Ben Cowan actually had a good perspective. And his perspective was, don't just look at the rate cuts. That's important. But if you want sort of a turnaround in the crypto markets, particularly, he linked this to Ethereum and then down the stack of other altcoins, you got to look at the Fed balance sheet as well. So this is the balance sheet. And look at this spike. From 2019, 2021, COVID, balance sheet expansion at the Fed. And we got all the way up to like almost $9 trillion. And since 2022, look at this period of time. You remember what happened, April, June, like May, June of 2022, mm-hmm. as the Fed balance sheet unwind. Do you remember what was happening in crypto at that time, David?
All of our liquidations and frauds and
oh, yeah.
Stuff.
You know, three Arrows Capital, Terra Luna got liquidated, and it's because the tide
the
was
traditional
going
markets
out.
Sneeze, and then we have the three biggest financial frauds in crypto history all get exposed at once.
Yeah. So anyway, Ben Cowan's perspective is, yeah, look at interest rates, but also look at the balance sheet. And the question is, will Powell continue to constrict the balance sheet, or will the balance sheet kind of reverse course and begin to expand? And if it expands, and plus you have interest rates going down, that is, my friends, what easy money monetary policy actually looks like from the metrics perspective. So we'll be looking at that.
Remember when the Silicon Valley banking crisis happened and everyone was like, something broke, now they're going to pivot. And you see that little blip upwards in the balance sheet.
Yeah.
Like we gain like maybe $200 billion on the balance sheet. And everyone's like, they're going to pivot. This is the sudden pivot. Something broke. And then the Fed just called the bluff. It was like, no, No, we're keeping interest rates high. And we've gone down like $1.5 trillion since then. Like, they're calling bluffs left and right, and they're getting them. They're getting them right.
They totally are. All right, David, we got more coming up. DeFi just had its first hearing in front of Congress, and it turned out to be, of course, a partisan battle. But we also got some pretty bullish statements from some of the lawmakers and politicians. And the crypto lawyers showed up, man. They were so on point.
Have you thanked a crypto lawyer today? Everyone thanked a crypto lawyer today. Yeah,
they were doing fantastic work. Also, Trump and Harris met for the first time, and lots of meme coins were made. Prediction markets were going crazy. Cats were being eaten. All sorts of craziness. We'll talk about all that and more when we get back. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including Kraken, our recommended exchange to go buy some crypto.
If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/banklist to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So, if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open. The Uniswap extension is here. The self-custody wallet, created by the most trusted team in DeFi, Uniswap Labs, designed to make swapping feel effortless. This extension lives in your browser's sidebar, letting you swap, sign transactions, and send or receive crypto without ever losing your place on the internet. Plus, with human-readable transaction messages, you'll always know exactly what you're signing. Navigate a multi-chain world effortlessly with support for 11 chains like Ethereum Mainnet, Base, Arbitrum, and Optimism. No more chain switching or token importing. All your assets are right where you need them to be. The Uniswap extension is designed to level up your swapping experience with other Uniswap Labs products as well. Easily onboard to the extension using the Uniswap mobile wallet to begin managing your assets across platforms and take advantage of smooth, seamless synergies with the Uniswap web app. So go and download the Uniswap extension today by clicking the link in the show notes. Just another way Uniswap is helping you swap smarter.
Something historic happened this week for the first time ever. We've, of course, had many congressional hearings about facets of cryptocurrency, about Bitcoin, about stablecoins, all sorts of things. We've never had a meeting specifically in front of Congress about decentralized finance. And that changed this week. It was historic. So DeFi was on the menu. This is a hearing to break down the future of decentralized finance. And it was hosted by Representative French Hill. He's been on the Bankless podcast before. He's a crypto advocate. And he leads this subcommittee called the Subcommittee on Digital Assets, FinTech, and Financial Inclusion that reports the House Financial Services Committee. So it's a committee inside of a committee. There's not everyone in Congress, but there are a lot of familiar faces. And the subject matter was something near and dear to our heart. Bankless topics, DeFi. Mm-hmm.
And we had some of our best representatives there. Amanda Tuminelli, Peter Van Valkenburg from Coin Center, Rebecca Redig from Polygon. I think they all just killed it. So just like a round of applause for all of the crypto lawyers. Like I said, you can't thank a crypto lawyer enough. Let's hear some of Amanda Tuminelli's statements, because I think that they were awesome and everyone should hear them.
That brings me to my second point. The existing approach of trying to apply rules for TradFi to DeFi will not work. The traditional financial system requires intermediaries to function. Brokers affect stock trades and clearinghouses settle transactions. And that means that we need to trust intermediaries to do their jobs reliably and honestly. And the existing rules evolve to prevent the abuse of our trust. But DeFi doesn't use intermediaries. If I want to swap two digital assets using a DeFi protocol, there is no broker and there is no clearinghouse. DeFi's existence, the very reason that this technology was developed, was to eliminate the need to rely on intermediaries and empower people to transact directly with their peers. Existing law assumes that there is some identifiable entity that can take possession of my funds, collect information about my transaction, and even block a trade. But that entity does not exist in DeFi.
This point that Amanda makes, David, is so important. This is the thing that the entire U.S. government, regulators, Congress, the White House, everyone needs to learn. The big difference here and why all of the previous rules cannot apply in the same way for DeFi is DeFi does not have centralized intermediaries, right, guys.
It's the one thing that like makes the world of difference.
And that's basically the neck that they strangle. That's how they regulate the traditional financial industry. So I'm so glad Amanda started with these comments. David, there was some opposition, though, from some of the people we've heard from in Congress from the past. Maxine Waters, what did Maxine say about this?
Maxine Waters and then also Representative Brad Sherman as well. They kind of they were basically making the same points, which is highlighting the risks of DeFi, but also really talking about, but how do we control this thing? How do we surveil the financial system? How do we make sure there aren't like scammers and fraudsters and terrorists and drug dealers using these systems? And they were just caught up on that point. Like, well, how do we control it? How do we surveil it? Why? How do we get to 100% surveillance? And you could just really see the perception difference that between the Democrats and the Republicans, where the Republicans are like, the freedom of peer-to-peer money and finance. And the Democrats are like, how do we control it? And like, it's just such a stark difference, man.
Yeah, it was. Maxine Waters specifically, she called out some of the Trump projects, the Trump DeFi projects. And she made the point that I guess there was a hacked Twitter account of some sort that created a fake scam coin,
fake Trump coin.
A fake Trump coin. And, you know, thousands of people lost money on this. It happens all of the time. And she's like, the government has to step in and help protect people. That was her point. Brad Sherman was caught up on this idea that only like tax evaders are billionaires. The billionaire class is rampantly using DeFi to avoid paying taxes, which I think they have lots of ways to avoid paying taxes.
Completely unfounded.
I don't think any of them involve DeFi. Like DeFi is just like not a good way to avoid paying taxes.
DeFi is such a terrible way
Everything's
to
on
avoid
chain,
paying
Brad.
Taxes.
So there's that. And then, of course, they brought in their kind of key witnesses. The opposition did, one of which was an analyst at the Americans for Financial Reform. His name was Mark Hayes. And he basically said, this is a quote, crypto and DeFi industries is highly volatile, scam laden, and extremely predatory, which exposes investors to substantial financial losses. And he also believed that the current security law paradigm should totally apply to DeFi in the exact same way.
Another person who did a bang up job, Peter Van Valkenburg from Coin Center, who I think you and I truly appreciate, Peter, because he makes the right points, but he connects it to American history.
Hell yeah.
In this
Peter's
really
so
just like precise, sharp way. And of course, he delivered just beautifully here. So let's go ahead and listen to Peter.
So what Member Foster suggested, where the problem with anonymity is that we don't have 100% identification and control over financial transactions in the economy, I don't think we'll have 100% identity and control over DeFi transactions. And I think we will have robust anonymity, and that's an American constitutional right. So you have a constitutional right to anonymous transactions that support organizations and causes that defend against discrimination and violations of our constitutional rights. We fought about this during the civil rights movement in the 1970s. As Thurgood Marshall said with respect to the Bank Secrecy Act, the law that actually requires financial surveillance of custodial intermediaries, though not non-custodial intermediaries, Marshall dissented from the constitutionality of even that level of surveillance. He said, "The fact that some may use negotiable instruments for illegal purposes cannot justify the government's running roughshod over the First Amendment rights of the hundreds of lawful yet controversial organizations like the ACLU, Congress may well be correct in concluding that law enforcement would be facilitated by the dragnet requirements of the Bank Secrecy Act, but those who wrote our Constitution recognized more important values.
Hell yeah.
More
go
important
Peter.
Values.
Yes.
Yeah. God, it just sends goosebumps down my arms the entire time.
It's just so good. It's, imagine somebody in Congress saying, hey, guys, you actually don't have the constitutional right to financially surveil all of your citizens. Right. The Bank Secrecy Act.
No, you can't do that.
Yeah. The Bank Secrecy Act was probably unconstitutional, he says. But beyond that, how are you now trying to expand the Bank Secrecy Act to all peer-to-peer transactions? That's right. Clearly a breach of the Constitution, like bringing it back to the basics here. And like, it shouldn't be up to DeFi to defend itself. I mean, we should be saying, like, we have a right default de facto under the Constitution to be able to do peer-to-peer commerce.
It was pretty cool to see friend of the pod, our favorite statist, Rowan Gray, retweet this this speech from Peter, who says, this is the correct position, and it's really embarrassing that an unforced error, how many liberals and center-left people have embraced propaganda to the point of dismissing payments anonymity as something of bad or pro-crypto-coded rather than the obvious defense of civil liberties that it is. I love Rowan. I love Rowan.
Do you
so
really?
I
disagree with him on so many things, but I appreciate his consistency.
Except on privacy. He's on privacy, we are 100% aligned.
Yeah, 100% aligned, except with respect to the tactics, because Rowan Gray thinks like you can just pass legislation and suddenly
the government will give us privacy. Yeah, like, we'll just build a CBDC that gives you privacy.
Yeah,
I disagree with
that. We could pass that in Congress. Yeah, anyway. So I do agree he's right there. So how would you kind of summarize this? So we talked about the Congress not understanding intermediaries and this delta, it seems like, between those who want financial surveillance and complete surveillance, very uncomfortable with ceding that control to protocols and to code, and those that are just like much more open to it. I mean, the title of the subcommittee is Digital Assets and Financial Inclusion. Look at all the benefits that this can bring. How would you summarize how this went?
I think, well, we have our crypto lawyers, right? Like all the three that I mentioned, who I think made some of the best points that we would want them to make. I don't really think these hearings do all that much with moving the needle. At the end of the day, like, party lines are drawn before these hearings even start. Like, bills are drafted regardless of these things. But it is an educational moment, and we get to have some of our best educators. Crypto lawyers are some of our best educators in front of the people that matter the most and make really strong points. And honestly, it teaches us how to also use those same points as well. So it's just a moment of education, and with the right people that need it the most.
This is zooming out from Jake Chervinsky. I remember years ago when DeFi was like 10 projects that no one thought would amount to anything. Now it's on full display in the halls of power in DC. I think that's a fantastic take of look how far we've come.
How far we've come, but it might all end soon as well. Did you watch the debate?
It might all end? What do you mean, like America might end?
I don't know, man. I was watching the debate and I'm just like, how is this real life, dude?
Yeah, not feeling great about the options here. Gentleman's bet that you and I had, and you should have put some money behind this, David, was like,
I'm right every single time.
I was thinking that crypto might get mentioned. Some probability, and you were like, hell no, there's no chance. And indeed, we got dogs and cats and eating them mentioned, but we did not get crypto mentioned inside this debate. So congrats on
dogs and cats got mentioned before crypto.
Congrats on your win. There was a lot of things that weren't discussed in this, including, as Eric Voorhees pointed out, and this might be the most bullish indicator for crypto yet, which is the U.S.
debt
was not talked about at all. He made this point in every.
That's not a problem.
Yeah, it's not a problem.
Just ignore the debt. We can just get more debt.
It's worked so far. this is Eric Voorhees. In every presidential debate, there's always been a question about the national debt. Coming from the moderators, the debt is materially higher now. It is no longer being asked about.
Huh. We can just print money. We've solved the debt problem.
The absence of that as a topic, like, probably speaks volumes. So I think he makes a great point there. The question of who won, I watched in the aftermath of this, there was all sorts of political analysts. I think most of them were skewing on the side of Harris kind of like won that debate. But the great thing about crypto is we actually get to see the market reaction for this.
I think, like, previously to Polymarket, anytime anyone ever said who won the debate, it was always loaded and you couldn't trust it because of the bias of whoever is giving that particular take.
Yeah.
For now, for the first time, we have immediate, present, objective answers.
Yeah, it's so much better.
As to who won the debate.
You're right. It's so much better. Like, because blue media will tell you one thing, they'll have their candidate and they'll skew it in one direction. Red media will skew it another direction. But like prediction markets, they're just like,
prediction markets.
Yeah, they just want truth.
With $1.5 million on the line, it is given a 99% chance that people will decide that Kamala won the debate. And that is the oracle. That is the oracle. To me, that is the deciding factor.
Wait, so what happened? So I was kind of looking at charts the next day, the Polymarket. Mm-hmm. And I think going into the debate, Trump was ahead. It was something like 52%. On Polymarket or 53%?
Oh, no, you're looking at it right here. So leading up to the debate, Kamala had a 75% chance.
This is winning, the debate. But I was talking about winning the presidential election. So, you know, on Polymarket,
winning the presidential election. Yes. So I think it came into like Kamala was like 48 and Donald Trump was 53.
Yep.
And now Kamala's at 50 and Donald Trump's at 49. And you watch that happen live. And I was actually sending that to my family. It's like, yo, watch this reaction in real time. Like Donald Trump has lost 3% odds as a result of this debate.
It's great because it's quantifiable. But it's like, oh, it's 3%. It's not the end of the world for his campaign. Right. He can come back. It's just like not a big deal. But there's a quantifiable loss in his probability of winning as a result of this debate performance. And by the way, probably the Taylor Swift endorsement, that probably factored into to these numbers here too. But that wasn't the only thing being bet
there on. There is almost $1 billion on this market.
Isn't that crazy?
$896 million between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's a huge market and it's receiving like massive attention. But this is not the only market. They weren't just betting on who won the debate or the presidential election winner. There's like these smaller sub markets that you've been tracking too.
God,
like what are these?
The D-Gen markets. These are D-Gen markets.
Okay.
Yeah, so like people were gambling as to like what words will be said on the debate. And so there were words like Springfield, because that's where the pets were getting eaten. And so like Donald Trump just won. People were betting whether Donald Trump would bring up Springfield.
Really?
Which they did. I watched a video of a guy, I think this was on Instagram or like TikTok or something. And a guy was like, he saw the lead up to it and he was like, say Springfield. He's like dancing. He's like jumping in front of the TV, like say Springfield. And then Donald Trump says Springfield. And he goes, let's fucking go. I just won $5,000.
What?
I just won $5,000. Yeah. So people are just like live betting in real time about like whatever the hell like is being uttered on, like cats and dogs, I think were definitely on there as well.
They were also betting whether there would be a handshake, I think. So all of these like
there's a handshake
micro markets being bet here. And Polymarket is going mainstream, David. Do you see this? So Polymarket are now being quoted on CNN in a pretty big way.
Well, this isn't just being quoted, this is an actual interview about Polymarket. Like this is them doing a feature of Polymarket.
What did they say here? Oh, they're going through. I see this in this clip.
They have Polymarket streamed on their like on their screen.
You know what's actually hilarious? So last week we were talking about Polymarket being integrated in Bloomberg, and here you see it. You know, CNN anchor like download putting all of these metrics. This is like you're on CNN, you're on Bloomberg. This is legitimacy.
Will they shake hands? 28% say yes.
See, it's so interesting. Media cannot help it. Trad media cannot help these numbers.
That's
will they shake hands?
Just, 28%. It's candy. It's content candy.
Google gain more in the holes. What will Harris say at the debate? It's all on Polymarket. What's crazy about this too, and ironic, as much legitimacy as Polymarket is receiving these channels, U.S. users still can't use it.
They can't be kept
geo-blocked.
On their own. We're actually talking about foreigners betting on our prediction.
You can see it in the market, right? So you could go to the website, you'd see it in the market, but if you have a U.S. IP address, it doesn't allow you to deposit and partake in these markets because the laws are so dumb here.
Because this is dumb. That is so funny.
That should have been brought up in the DeFi congressional hearing, I think, but wasn't.
Okay, so let's talk about the reaction in the crypto world to the presidential debate. So there is people going back and forth about whether or not the Bitcoin price is an oracle about the Donald Trump presidency versus the Kamala presidency. In the middle of the debate, while Kamala is like, will Kamala win the debate? was going up to 99%, you actually saw Bitcoin sell off by like $800 and Ether sell off by like $100. Wow. You notice that?
Yeah. So that was, it's at like 3%, something like that in that range.
Yeah. Like 3% or something like that, which ironically, like the odds of how much Kamala increased versus Donald Trump in the presidential election odds on Polymarket. But not everyone agrees with that. So Micah Polito says the coins don't seem to care about Trump's performance last night. I'm gaining conviction that this election matters way less than everyone thinks. Markets hate uncertainty. As soon as that gets removed one way or another, the prices will respond, because they did bump back up the next day. So
what do you think?
People are kind of undecided. Yeah. So like I'm unsure. I could use some more data here. Like it's really hard to imagine like Donald Trump says he's going to put Bitcoin on the balance
sheet. This is what I mean. If Kamala Harris wins, maybe it's not disaster scenario for crypto. But if Trump wins, how is that not the most bullish thing ever for crypto, given what he's said like previously? I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see how this plays out. But it's a coin flip at this point in time in terms of who might win. Yeah. What do we got coming up?
Yeah. Coming up next, FriendTech no longer updating the app. What happened? What will we do with the app now? And also, you can use your ENS name to send Ether stablecoins inside of Venmo and PayPal. And also, my favorite part about this agenda, Vitalik just laying down the law on layer twos. We're going to talk about all of this and more, but first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors who make this show possible. New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. Launching a token? Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation. Vitalik, more active on Twitter now than he has been in like many years past, tweeted this out earlier. I take this seriously. Starting next year, I plan to only publicly mention in my blogs, talks, etc., layer twos that are stage one plus, with maybe a short grace period for genuinely new interesting projects. It doesn't matter if I invested or if you're my friend, stage one or bust. Multiple ZK rollup teams have told me that they're on track to be stage one by end of year. I'm excited to see that happen. Of course, we should not be throwing away training wheels because we are actually confident that the proof systems are secure. That would be irresponsible. But stage one, which is a 75% threshold on the Security Council to override a proof system, plus 25% of that council must be outside of the rollup team, is a very reasonable, moderate milestone. The multisigs I'm in have not had a single liveness failure in years, let alone 26%. The era of rollups being glorified multisigs is coming to an end. The era of cryptographic trust is upon us. So Vitalik saying, hey, like, if you are not a stage one multisig, you are not worth mentioning to me.
Wow.
Which is dope.
Yeah. So this is applied social pressure, I would say, from the most prominent leader in the Ethereum space. He's not going to mention your project unless you get to the first stage of decentralization for your layer two. Do you think this will work? Do you think that this will push layer twos in a positive direction?
I mean, I think it was heading this way anyways. And maybe it was heading there kind of, maybe perhaps lackadaisically. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
Maybe it was heading there slowly or something.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like within reach by these teams. Like, if these teams want to be stage one, they can be stage one.
Yeah.
And so Vitalik is saying, just get there, and then I will continue to mention you.
Did you see,
whenever it comes time for me to mention
you? I saw this on Twitter, like Kane Warwick and others sort of memeing, this is war mode Vitalik. It's great to see it.
War mode Vitalik.
Basically,
yeah.
Being a
That's
bit more assertive.
He was also just dunking on people who were like, didn't deserve to be in Vitalik's like replies, and Vitalik was like, get out of my replies, basically.
Well, interesting, but the very next day, or the same week, he tweeted this. We've got an update from ZK Sync. So what is this?
ZK Sync blog post saying, welcome to ZK Sync on-chain governance. And so ZK Sync has released their on-chain governance system, which might put them at stage one. They are currently in review process on layer two beat, but there are some things that are now true about the ZK Sync governance system. Protocol upgrades to ZK Sync are approved exclusively on chain. Protocol upgrades cannot happen without token holder approval. So the token is actually the object doing the governance. All protocol upgrades go through the Security Council review. That's pretty normal. That's the training wheels that Vitalik is talking about. And governance can assign a new sequencer. So if a sequence starts to become a censoring sequencer, governance can give them the boot, as well as another things as well. They call this three-body governance. So you have the token assembly, which is the token holders, the Security Council, which is like the sophisticated people who can review code and would overcome a fraud proof if we ever needed to, and then ZK Sync guardians, which make sure that governance proposals are consistent with the values of the ZK credo that ZK Sync holds so dear. So this just got put out today. This could potentially turn ZK Sync into a stage one. They need to release details about the Security Council thresholds for how much it takes for the Security Council to overcome a proof. And also, depending on if the ZK Sync Foundation is considered an outside entity to ZK Sync the platform. And so there are some nuances that are being reviewed here by the Layer 2 beat.
And by the way, Layer 2 beat, can't say enough great things about that. They are doing the hard. This is actually
one of the greatest public goods.
This is actually what regulation looks like in crypto. This is a regulator, basically doing the thing.
The most effective regulator. Yeah.
Yeah. Gary Gensler, you should be doing this. Actually, we don't want him anywhere near
get
this.
Actually, no, get out of here. Get out of here. Don't tell Gary Gensler about Layer 2
beat. This is Layer 2 beat. We're looking at it right now, and you can see there's two prominent Layer 2s that are stage 1, and they're trying to get to stage 2. Of course, this is Arbitrum and OP Mainnet, but most of the rest are not. I guess DYDX V3 is here, but like Base is not, Blast is not, Mantle is not yet, Scroll, ZK Sync Era working their way towards it. So a lot of work needs to be done in order for Vitalik to mention your project next year.
Can you hover over the ZK Sync? Because they actually have a little question mark over their pie. I think on their pie on the right. I think it just means, project under review.
Under review. Cool. It's already updated.
They update this so fast. That's great. Okay, which is the thing that gets the next stage one, do you think?
I think base is hustling.
I mean, ZK Sync might get it like next week.
Yeah.
And then after that, I think it would be Base.
Yeah, Base has multiple reasons. You know, another driving factor that people don't often talk about is not just social pressure, but also I think there's some regulatory. There's going to be some regulatory pressure.
There's so much regulatory pressure.
As a layer two.
That's kind of like the biggest incentive beyond just internal crypto.
Yeah, do you want to be fully on the hook for all the activity that happens?
Do you want to be considered a money transmitter? Do you have a money transmitter license? No, you don't.
Oh, my. Matter Labs doing some other things. ZK Sync, they just hired the former Solana Foundation chief marketing officer. Is that right? A little snipe action going on?
Yeah, sniped by ZK Sync. The Megan Hughes, going from Solana to ZK Sync. So congratulations on the hire, ZK Sync.
Not the only Layer 2 news this week. This was interesting. Remember we talked about Sony's Layer 2. There's not a lot of information about it, but something new emerged, which is actually Sony is going to create a stable coin, a Japanese yen stable coin. Sony apparently has a bank called the Sony Bank, and so the Sony Bank is going to...
Sony has a bank?
Yeah. I mean, I guess they have everything. There's like, you know, Japanese megacorp. They do everything. It's not just Walkman. The Japanese yen.
Walkman and banks.
Yeah, Walkman, yen. Walkman, banks, stable coins, and layer twos now. So they're going to put this on their layer two. So we'll see how that emerges. But it looks like development is happening. It's pretty smart It's a pretty smart move here.
All right, so this was going around crypto Twitter this week. Frentech has renounced control over the smart contracts. They called a function which transfers the control to Ethereum's null address. The null address is 0x00000. It means that no one owns that. So they cannot change. The Frentech team cannot change the protocol going forward. It doesn't affect the web client. The web client is still like the operational by the team. So the platform will obviously still work. They can still add new features to the like the web app. But the actual underlying smart contracts are like now immutable. This has come with like a bunch of pushback of people saying like, you guys are abandoning the project. Like you guys earned like $44 million in fees. And now you guys are just saying goodbye. Frentech, the actual Frentech official Twitter account saying like, we're not doing that. We're actually still going to develop the protocol. We're just like locking the smart contracts because of like decentralization and immutability. And like, what more do you expect? And so this goes to show like, once again, that if you make any money in crypto, you become vilified. That's kind of like a meme that happens in crypto Twitter.
Oh, do you think that's true?
I don't know.
Do you think that's true? I don't know. So I don't know about
sometimes. It's very much so. People who make money in crypto often find themselves having to defend the fact that they made money
in
crypto.
And also there's this history of crypto founding projects, particularly DeFi, that abandon their project too early. I like all these orphan projects that I see, which is basically in the name of decentralization, they're kind of like, release the token, sell some of my token, get wealthy, bye-bye. Have I created any value? Like, not sustainable value. So on the other side of this, and part of the narrative I think is coming from people who are just like tired of all of the orphan DeFi projects who quit too early in the name of decentralization. So that's kind of like another, I don't know what's going on in friend.tech. I guess, you know.
Yeah, for what it's worth, they didn't sell any tokens.
Yeah.
They accumulated $44 million of Ether in fees. So they actually didn't mint and sell a token. They did mint a token, they gave it to people, but they didn't profit from selling the token.
I see, but this also like they did profit from the hype, right? And I guess my question is like, did they create anything sustainable?
Well, no, they didn't. They didn't profit from the hype. I would say if they sold the token, they profited from the hype.
Do you think, David?
But they profited from the fees that came because of the hype.
Let's create a new benchmark. Do you think in 10 years, like what will Frentech be to the world? Will it have been just like one blip that like decentralized and just like, you know, founders didn't work on it again? Mm-hmm. Or will it be like, oh, they decentralized and now all of this entire, like this whole app community is building on top of it and is actually providing some utility and value to the world? Like which outcome is more likely, do you think?
I think statistically the outcome of just like it's a blip is
that's,
going
that's
to be
what
true.
I mean, it's like,
but that has nothing to do with Frentech though. Like that's just startups statistically are always blips.
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever. I just feel like it would be nice. Here's one thing I will say. It would be really nice if we saw the Frentech experiment completely play out. And the team, maybe they're still doing work on it, but I would love to see a year from now, 2 years from now, like an entire social ecosystem built on this thing. Because it had so much, do you remember it was a year ago? It had so much promise when it was released. Mm. They were doing kind of like, the user experience felt clean. They were doing something new. They had the full attention of like the crypto social community on it. And that opportunity just feels somewhat squandered right now. And I'm hopeful that they just don't allow it to just kind of like sink into oblivion and nothingness.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's a little bit of a Schrodinger's position here. Okay, moving on to other news. Eigenlayer, the second stake drop for season two. So reminder, we've already had season one. Season one had phase one and two. Those are both over. Those were over forever ago. Season two of the Eigenlayer stake drop is upon us. This is going to be 5.2 of the initial Eigen supply. I think 5% was for season one. 5.2% is for now. And it's also kind of similar. If you are an Eigenlayer restaker or through an LRT protocol, you have Eigen that you need to claim. You can claim, if you are restaking through a specific LRT protocol, you can claim your Eigen through that respective protocol. The claims open on September 17th. So that's 5 days from the day of recording, 4 days if you're listening to this on Friday. Claims.eigenfoundation.org. Be very careful about phishing links. And then there will be some other edge cases as well for people who are just beyond staking. So 70 more million Eigen tokens. Congrats to all Eigenlayer restakers.
Wait.
What's myself a pat on the back there?
what's
hard-earned tokens?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You've been working hard for those. What's the time horizon for season two eligibility? Was that like April or something through August? Looks like.
Yes. Okay. So if you were restaking an eigenlayer, if you had ETH and eigenlayer between March 15th and August 15th, you are eligible.
Now, you can get the tokens, you can pick them up, but you can't move them, right? So they're locked tokens.
You can't move them. They're still locked. I'm guessing that these tokens are going to be unlockable by end of year? January?
Here's a sentence for you.
My guess.
As we approach unlock of the eigen token. As we approach unlock of the eigen token. That's in the official blog post. So we're approaching it.
Those are eigenlayer's words.
Not ours, yeah.
Eigenlayer said that we are approaching the unlock. They said it in their blog. Yeah,
up for interpretation. All right. ENS now integrated with PayPal and Venmo. That's a big deal. This feels like would be absolutely huge. If you went for it in 2019 when we were very excited about .eths and you said, hey, like 5 years from now, this is going to be in Venmo and PayPal, I would have been over the moon excited. And I'm still excited. This is a pretty big deal. Yeah. So what does this actually mean practically, though, if somebody has a Venmo account?
Yeah. So like there's been stable coins and either Ether and other cryptocurrencies inside of Venmo and PayPal for a while now. And now you can just send it outbound to ENS. It's just like very legitimizing to ENS.
Yeah.
If you have a valuable ENS names, like they're probably a little bit more valuable today as a result.
No. It's like getting Polymarket and Bloomberg. That's the kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just
that's right.
Legitimizing. That's right. This is Brantley.eth saying it's been a tear this year for ENS. A recap for everyone who's been asleep. Google search recognizes ENS names. So if you type trustlessstate.eth, I guess, we'll see all your accounts, see all your money. Is that right, David? GoDaddy supports
all of it. I hold all of my money at DavidHoffman.eth.
GoDaddy also supports DNS names in ENS. That was a big deal. Coinbase and Uniswap have issued hundreds of thousands of subnames. Oh, that's right. You can get all of your like base subnames and Uniswap subnames. And now PayPal and Venmo support ENS for sending crypto. So Brantley pretty excited about the traction here.
Big release out of Coinbase. They were teasing it a while ago, but CBBTC is now released. Coinbase Bitcoin is now a token. I'm assuming being issued on Base and also Ethereum. Yeah, also Ethereum. And so this was, I don't know how long they've been working on this project, but especially when the whole BitGo WBTC drama happened, Coinbase was like, I see an opportunity here. And so now Coinbase CBBTC is now out and about. Also, there's already a proposal to get it into Spark. And so that's pretty cool. Spark is a lending facility that's part of the MakerDAO system. And so you can now put Coinbase, there's a proposal to put Coinbase BTC inside of Spark so you can put BTC in, withdraw DAI. And the cool thing here, this is actually just from the press release. When users send BTC from Coinbase to an address on Base or Ethereum, the BTC will automatically be converted to CBBTC and vice versa. So you can send CB Bitcoin to Coinbase and it'll show up as Bitcoin inside of Coinbase, not as CB Bitcoin, as
interesting.
Vanilla cool. Organic Bitcoin. If you have vanilla Bitcoin, you can send Bitcoin to Ethereum and it comes out as Coinbase Bitcoin.
Yeah. And of course, the value of this is now you can use Bitcoin in the DeFi ecosystem more readily. Of course, there have been products like this in the past. Wrapped Bitcoin was one of them from BitGo. Mm-hmm. That's been a pretty popular one. But now this has kind of like Coinbase backing behind it, which is a big deal.
Question for you, Mr. Taxman. If I have Bitcoin and I haven't touched it in years, I send it to Coinbase and then I send it to Ethereum and it comes out as CB Bitcoin. Did I just incur a taxable event?
Yeah. So what's your, first of all, I know this is hypothetical because my man David Hoffman does not own any Bitcoin, at least last time I checked.
Hey, that wasn't part of the question.
Purely hypothetical. All right. So imagine if somebody like David owned Bitcoin who went and did this. It definitely depends on kind of the jurisdiction and like what your tax folks will say. I think personally, not tax advice, not financial advice, all of these things. There's some uncertainty when you do something like you stake your ETH on Coinbase. If you take like vanilla ETH and you turn it into Coinbase ETH, right? So CETH, a lot of accountants will consider that a taxable event. That means you have to pay on the gains in that incursion, okay?
And but accountants kind of like lawyers where they're kind of protecting themselves, not you?
No, I think they're not necessarily liable. I think that you get more conservative and like accountants interpretation of the tax laws. The problem is, and by the way, this came up in DeFi, the DeFi congressional hearings is like the IRS has provided no clarity how to treat these things. Anyway, but what I do think is an absolutely asinine idea and not a position that I would ever take, is let's say you take ETH, vanilla ETH, and then you turn that into tokenized ETH, so it becomes WEETH, right? It's just It's not a third party custody. It's just like a token wrapper. How in the world could that be a tax event? There's like no way. You're just like wrapping it in some smart contract code. Okay, so there's some ambiguity here. I guess all this to say is like, you should talk to you. Depends. Do you want to take a conservative, really conservative
position for your tax advice?
Yeah, this probably take way too. Oh, one other thing I'll say is people should know there's a trade off here. This is not like Bitcoin on the Bitcoin blockchain. This is custodied by a third party, not your keys, not your crypto. Okay. Also, Coinbase, because of regulations, they have similar whitelist, blacklist ability to freeze capabilities that they do on USDC. So if you think this is like a completely permissionless asset, it's not. Mm-hmm. If you want a permissionless asset, you got to go get vanilla ETH, not a custody ETH, or, you know, ETH on a layer two, or Bitcoin on the Bitcoin blockchain. So I just want to be careful that the custodied banks don't start to take over this space and we forget like the reason we're here and why we're going bankless.
Right. Say, for example, what was the executive order that forced people to turn in their gold in the 30s?
Yeah, the FDR executive order. It's got a number. I can't think of the number off the top of my head, but yeah.
Yeah, imagine that there's an executive order to everyone needs to turn in all their Bitcoins and sell it for dollars. And you had to do that because of an executive order. If you have CB Bitcoin, that's being done for you on your behalf.
You don't have your keys.
By Coinbase. Yep. You don't have the keys. If you have your Bitcoin, it's still under your control. You can still hide your private keys under your bed.
That's where David hides them.
That's where I keep my private keys.
All right. So as we close out this roll-up, we are now, and this shocked me because I can't believe we're almost in, I mean, we're close to permissionless. We're close to the conference. Mm-hmm. This is almost October. So there's less than 30 days between now and your fight with Kane Warwick. Okay.
Right.
And I knew you were on like a training program, but like you're flying all over the world doing all these things. I didn't realize that you actually had to put on some weight for this. And a large amount of weight. So, this is, by the way, this is going to happen on October 11th in Salt Lake City.
Friday, October, the last day of permissionless at the very end. So you have to stick around to the end of permissionless if you want to see this.
You are fighting Kane Warwick, and he is a significantly...
Everyone's favorite villain. Everyone hates Kane Warwick. Everyone wants me to win. Everyone wants me to win. Everyone's talking about it. I really want David Hoffman to win.
Okay, so... but you have to gain some pounds because he is... he's a much bigger dude than you, right?
He's way bigger, yeah.
This is your tweet. All
Kane's
right.
like 6'2"?
6'2"?
Okay. Yeah, he's way bigger than me, dude.
All right. I have 30 days to gain 10 pounds before my fight with Kane. I need to do it in a way that doesn't allow me to use agility. Doing hella sprints is making this hard. I need ideas. Okay, what ideas did you get from this? And are any of them good?
No, they're all pretty bad. I mean, like, it's all kind of like the basic stuff. 10 pounds in 30 days isn't that hard. I just have to, like, basically be eating every single day. And I also have this like gentleman's agreement with Kane where like I don't want to have this fight completely take over my life. But also like I don't know how hard Kane is trying to train. And he's got brothers, bro. I don't have a brother. I have a sister.
Yeah,
I didn't fight with my sister. You didn't fight. He fought with his brothers.
Yeah, you didn't like punch each other in the face growing up.
No.
I'm sure Kane did this. Wow, man. Well,
I did spar with the guy who broke my rib the other day though. He said I got a lot better since him and I had last fought.
So crazy.
That's a true story.
It's so crazy that that's normal in like the fighting. You just like somebody broke your rib and then disappears for a few months and pops back. And I'm like, sorry, I did that, but let's fight again. Like,
yeah, that's right. That's exactly what happened. And he's like, oh, it's you. You're back. And I'm like, yep, I'm still here.
All right, David, we're cheering for you and looking forward to seeing the poly market up on that one to place our bets. Got to end with this, of course.
If you have a permissionless ticket, you automatically have a ticket to fight night.
Come
watch somebody get their ass kicked on October 11th.
I'm gonna be there. I think I'm gonna stream it. I think they've asked me to provide
Ryan Tronant is gonna be commentating the fight on streamed on Bankless. Ryan is nervous about commentating the fight.
I try to get out of that. I keep trying to get out of that. I'm like, I don't want to comment on it. And David's like, I'm fighting a dude. Okay, least you can do is show up and
the
comment.
Least you can do.
All right, so I'm doing the absolute least as usual. Okay, risk and disclaimers. Of course, you know crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is a frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.